Look, Matt.
Where? Oh, I see. Wow.
Oh, my.
Oh, and look over there.
Wow, is that
culture? Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
So, listen, what does it feel like exactly to be a sexual icon?
I don't know about any of this. I don't know,
I know about any of this. When I saw you with that handlebar mustache, it was a story like that had never been told.
Well, that's a fairy tale and a fantasy because I will never be able to grow a mustache of that shape and size and volume because I'm only working with the snaggly ones.
Mama, the magic they're able to do with surgery now, we could get sort of hair plugs for your face. How about that?
No way. I'm not getting no plugs on my upper lip.
It aged you up about 15 years.
It really did.
And give you this sort of authority that was, I guess, intrinsically sexual that I think took America by storm.
Well, it defined my jawline because I think it was able to break like the shapelessness of it. And then it actually like made it like, oh, it's there. It like excavated the fucking thing for all to see. Like it was Jurassic Park.
What? Like, they dug
that
up the bones.
Make sense.
They dug up, they exhumed your face.
Yes. The fucking mosquito was in the amber all along.
It was startling to watch. I really, really enjoyed it. And the episode overall was super fun.
I thought it was a really fun episode. I thought, not going to shade them, but the air audience was bad. Actually,
again?
No, that's not even shade. That's just how it's been these last four shows. We don't have to talk about it.
Well, they were dead during her monologue, for sure.
Dead during her monologue. But they were just, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know these crowds. I get it, though. Like, it's probably just bizarre of them to be there. But they know what it is. They signed up for these tickets. I don't know. I don't mean to like create
drama with the crowds.
Acrimony with the crowds. This is the danger between you and me and the danger that's in these episodes that are just you and me is that we get a little too unfiltered.
Well, it's because it's us truly catching up.
I know.
And also I'm about to step into another zone because I am going to get stoned again. But
you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's actually kind of my life. I actually have to get my lighter. Hold on. Can you talk to them for a sec?
Yeah. Okay. So I was considering smoking reader for this one, but, I'm holding my vape pen in my hand and I'm looking at it very pensively while I tell you that I might do it too. I might as well join in on
this. I mean, look, Quibi's dead.
Okay, yes.
We're just kind of like, this is going to be our in memoriam for Quibi.
No, oh my God, no. Does Quibi deserve the in memoriam to you?
I mean, TBD. I just like...
How do you feel?
You know... The writing has been on the wall for quite some time.
That's right.
And I just feel like, I don't know. There's lots of things that I would have maybe done differently on their end, but I don't know how to run a fucking business. I don't know anything.
Sure.
But ultimately, end of the day, I'm happy that they put Game Show on. I like what it is on the Quibi app, but I'm excited to potentially take it out and do it as an actual half hour show, which I think is what it is.
Exactly.
To me, it's just like feels jammed into like, the 7-minute format. And I was never excited about the 7-minute format. I thought it was going to be more 8 to 10 minute stuff. And then things ended up getting shorter and shorter, but
it was supposed to be 10
from
the beginning. It was supposed to be 10. And that actually felt like a nice Goldilocks, like perfect number.
I was excited about a 10-minute thing. And then a lot of the scripted stuff was able to stay at that length. And then for whatever reason, the unscripted stuff all got shorter and shorter. And that to me, I don't love. Like to me, sometimes I watch some of the episodes we were doing, and it's just like they cut all the breaths out. And I'm like, okay, this is like moving too fast. So I'm excited about potentially doing it somewhere else where it can breathe and there can be more of the relationship stuff with me and Dave and just more of us having fun and less like, it's moving forward, it's moving forward, it's moving forward.
I know,
because it just felt manic, especially like in like an immobile world. Like, I guess maybe we would have liked it as like a large consumer base if we were watching it mobile on the go, but then the world changed. And so we were all kind of watching it on our phones inside our houses during the second month of the pandemic. I don't know. I feel like if there was adjusting to be done to sort of suit that new situation, maybe it was too late. I feel bad for everyone that works there that lost their job because I think that everyone took a big risk to work there, and there's a lot of amazing people that work there that I'm grateful for that really cared about our show, and I like our show a lot. And
it's a good show.
And yeah, but ultimately it's sad whenever anything just fails. But I will say it was hard not to join in on a lot of the Quibi jokes over the past 7 months. Because I was trying to be a company man.
Sure. You had some liberated tone in your tweets, I saw, ever since the Quibi announcement.
Well, I had to delete them.
You did?
Yeah, because Variety, like, this was weird. So I tweeted, like, a bunch of jokes about Quibi. Like, I was really kidding. The tone of my tweets were very jokey. And then, like, there was this huge paragraph in Variety that was me being, like, they were like, a game show host, Matt Rogers. And I was a little embarrassed that, like, they were putting this comment from me in Variety, which was, like, a joke.
I hate that.
And I said I was excited to take it elsewhere, which I am. Now that Quibi is not a thing, I'm excited about the life of the show going forward. Mm-hmm. But ended up having to delete the tweets. I guess lesson learned about just tweeting, shooting from the hip. Variety's watching.
I don't think so, honey. Variety for, like, pulling, like, just thinking, like, making news out of people's tweets. I know that sounds normal.
Well, tweets are the public record.
I know, but they've done that with me where it's like they've built a whole headline around, like, two things I had written in a day. I'm just annoyed whenever they do that because I'm like, oh yeah, because that's how I feel about it too, where the medium is so stupid and dumb and, like, not meant to be taken seriously in the first place. At this point, like, I don't know who's, like, really taking Twitter seriously. It's just pure chaos, right? It's not even, like, no one's there to, like, make a career out of, like, writing jokes on Twitter. It's not like 2012 Twitter, where that was, like, the peak of, like, comedy job hiring, like, outlet, you know? Remember that time?
Yeah, when it was like, well, what's their Twitter following? What's the, like, it was kind of felt like you could get jobs based on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people did. Now it's just like Twitter to me is like a zoo with no enclosures.
Exactly.
It's just completely unregulated, wild west. Any old fucking thing can go on. You know what I mean? And, like, I could say something on this podcast and you could say something on this podcast.
And no one would give a shit.
No one cares because you can literally hear in the human voice, like, some sort of, like, knowingness or irony. And on Twitter, you say that same thing, and it is a whole different thing. I just think we live in a very sick world.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Literally last week, I said, I'm going to take the hit on this if anyone wants to hit us on this. I said, if Meghan McCain comes on the show and is able to charm us and get us to say, oh, we actually like her, that we would kill ourselves. And no one picked that up. If we had tweeted that, it would have been...
yeah, forget it.
Disastrous.
Also, I don't know, just following up on our conversation from last week. So... I don't know if I'd qualify myself in a particularly dark place, but it hasn't been, like, a good couple weeks.
No.
So for me, like, since last week, I made the mistake, because I hadn't done this in a while. I was like, I wonder if people are still engaging on Twitter about, like, hot dog. So I searched the hashtag hot dog, and there was this, this person said, there's one thing I can't stand about hot dog, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And they used the hashtag, and I just responded, and I saw the person followed me, and I responded, it's me, isn't it?
Oh, no.
And, like, a bunch of people liked it, and he goes, and then there was replies to the tweet that said, is it something that's easily excitable? And the person replied, it thinks it's a lot funnier than it is. And then someone else said, yeah, its mouth could be used better if it weren't talking. Like, someone basically said, I should be sucking dick instead of talking, hosting a show, whatever.
Or it's not even that clear because I don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. And it's those fucking D+ jokes, quote unquote. Ew. If you said that to Matt's face in the room and I was there, I would knock your fucking teeth out.
So I engaged. So the guy who did the initial tweet.
Honestly,
was,
I support you engaging, but yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so basically, like, I'm fully insane right now at this point in my life. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going to make this person feel really bad for saying this. Because I saw the person followed me and had recently retweeted me. So I know that they're not someone who hates me. So I literally said, what is this me you're talking about? And the person that originally tweeted goes, LOL, no, I'm talking about the fact that your job is so fun. Like, I'm so jealous. And then he hid all the replies. And I said, LOL at you hiding the replies. I'm fully in it. I'm fully engaging at this point. So I got in his DMs because I wanted him to sort of feel what it would feel like if someone he targeted online actually saw it. So I said, come on, that was mean. And he responded and he was like, I'm sorry. Literally, quite literally, it's just because I'm jealous. And I was like, why would you? I was like, I don't do this like
what is
for anything other than where I'm exactly, just trying to have fun exactly. and like make people smile. Like, it's like, why would you do
what
that?
What is that instinct?
And he goes, I'm sorry. It was so stupid. I fell into the trap. And I was like, it is a trap.
What trap? What's the trap that's laid out for someone like them, though? I don't understand.
Anyway, so I was just like, I felt like I was at that point, we were kind of on the same page. And I was kind of saying like, you know, this it will make you feel so much better. It will feel so much better to be supportive and positive because like you used the hashtag. You wanted this in a way.
You wanted it to be filed away. Yeah.
And he was only apologetic and he was like, I'll take it down. And he took it down. And honestly, it ended with us kind of being, he was like, I'm a fan. I liked Game Show. I subscribed to Quibi because of it. Like, I don't know why I did that. I think it was just like you punch back at the thing you like a little bit. I was like, okay, that's fine. Love you, bye.
I don't know what that means. I actually don't. I reject that apology. I'm so sorry, but that makes zero sense. But keep going.
I was thinking about it and I was like, you know what? On some level, everyone is guilty of this to some extent. Like even last week on this podcast, I dragged Kristen Stewart. I was like, she's the most grounded actress because she's not doing anything. And then I thought to myself, to be honest with you, it's the same sort of deal. So there's something to be learned from it on a personal level as well.
No, except you didn't like post that clip to Twitter and then hashtag like.
That's the thing is, it's like, I don't know. Like,
no, this is the fundamental difference is that person, we're not all guilty of this on the same level because sometimes you and I will get to say a catty thing to each other and mm-hmm. keep it to our fucking selves. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm sorry that maybe this person in that moment, I'll talk shit about, you know, Rowan on Great British Bake Off or whatever. And that's like maybe the same thing, but I'm not like hashtagging GBBO. I'm not like making sure it gets filed away in the system of this medium that like makes it maybe inadvertently seen by someone who's involved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, you were saying something positive. I'm like so on one. I'm so cranky today.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I also think like when I see that, it's just like, ugh, it just puts a little cloud over your day.
Of course.
And then I literally said to Joel the other day, I was like, part of me doesn't even know if I'm cut out for this. If on this job.
I feel the same way.
Literally, I said to him, I turned to him and I know he's gone through it with like Sunnyside too and et cetera, just being out there. It's like, it's a lot when you put yourself out there and people can just make any old comment. Like, and you don't know what is earned and what's not because you're mm-hmm. you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we laughed about it, but it is like a part of the whole thing. I've literally been staring at Trick Mirror and I'm like afraid to start reading it because I'm afraid of how deep this all goes. You know what I mean?
To start, she doesn't just talk about that. She talks about like the internet as a concept, which is mm-hmm. great. And then like the rest of the book sort of is in that neighborhood, but just you'll love it. It's great. She writes so well. You'll really dig it. Reader, we're sorry for coming in with like a really cantankerous energy, but I think this is something that is sort of the theme right now for us because we are kind of just sitting at home and watching. Ooh, what's this?
I mean, Anna just said, our producer said, this is why Phoebe Waller-Bridge refuses to have social media. She says she is too sensitive for the critiques.
Yes.
Honestly, I think it's like, it's not natural to be this vulnerable to critique. You know what I mean? Like the social media thing has heightened it so much. Like that's the thing. As artists, as people who are doing this, there's something intrinsic about us that is super sensitive and like emotional. And so for us to be this sort of aware of what everyone thinks mm-hmm, mm-hmm. is not natural. And like people throughout time haven't had to deal with this aspect of it.
No, this is what we talked about in therapy this week, where my impulse to like just care about what the audience thinks is rooted in like this thing where, or it's a result of me like prioritizing an audience response over my own like rubric of whether or not I did well. So like this week, this show, I mean, like I didn't have anything in the show that was mine that like I wrote, but I was just like, I just like tried not to care as much. I hope this was like a little incremental step in the right direction where I was just like, oh, you know, I'm not going to like look because I still did every now and then. But like, so I'm weaning off of it, but it's like, you know, as long as I feel like I did well, then that's all that matters. And
yeah,
it's not as simple as that, but I feel like that's the right way to go. And also, for me, like growing up and then working to sort of pound the pavement in comedy for a while after college, that whole period was for me, like me sort of pursuing comedy in a place that was laden with shame and like people being like, wait, you want to what? Oh, you're a comedian? Okay, got it. Well, good luck with that. And even like parents being like, we don't know about this. And then for that to suddenly flip and have it be like the only source of like accomplishment that I sort of experienced or like dealt with, that happened so quickly that I am still catching up to that place and I'm still kind of working in like a shame world. And so I'm like, I just want to, and like the way that like certain people define shame is that it's like not wanting to know what people say about you when you're not in the room. And so I'm kind of like trying to like swim up against that and be like, but I want to know what people are saying about me when I'm not in the room.
I know, that's literally the thing.
So I think this is, so reader, thank you for like listening to us sort of indulge ourselves in this conversation. But I think it's an interesting one to have.
It's, for me, it's so like, it's this thing that I'm going through and it does occupy a lot of brain space. I think also because of quarantine and not having a lot else to do, you're able to just sit in one thing because you're not busy. Like I happen to be like, the only thing I have going on right now is a lot, is nothing because of quarantine's aggressive taking of the things.
Yes. I just want to bring up one.
Bring it up.
This is a little mean, and it is definitely punching down. And I might have even been punching down to that person who like tweeted at you, who used the hashtag. No, I'm not. That wasn't punch. No, actually, no. That's not what that was.
I have no idea what to qualify it, and that's why I know it's something I don't want to deal with anymore.
Sure. I saw someone the other day tweet like, God, I'm all for LGBTQIA plus representation and POC representation. Not an Asian person, by the way. Mm-hmm. But then they say, it's really disappointing that at Bowen Yang uses, like, only uses his platform to, like, perpetuate stereotypes about his race and his sexuality or whatever.
What is going on?
And so for a non-Asian person to be like, he's perpetuating stereotypes. Like, I'm like, I don't want you to be the person, the arbiter of what is an Asian stereotype, sir. And then I went over to his fucking profile and his bio is like, photographer, then a gunkle. And I was like, bitch, your whole existence is on the nose if you're going to include gunkle in your fucking bio.
You can't be a gunkle and criticize.
So don't say that don't perpetuate anything about me, like stagnating the identity cause of what being gay is to you. Like, don't, like, who, there is, there is something I kind of hate just about the concept of stereotypical, just stereotype as concept, I think is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, it's just, first of all, it's actually rule of culture number 83. You can't be a gunkle and criticize.
You can't be a gunkle and criticize.
You cannot be a gunkle and criticize at all. You're not in that position.
You can be a gay uncle and criticize, but if you self-identify as a gunkle, shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Gunkle, unless it's some sort of new treat out.
Oh.
That's like a gum chocolate. That's what gunkle sounds like it should be to me. Unless it's that, I don't want to think about it, gunkles. Okay, she's arrived at being very stoned. Gunkles,
she's arrived.
You sound dumb.
You sound dumb.
I feel bad that we come in with the dark energy, but isn't it, you know, and like, I feel like it's a thing though. I am feeling not a depression, but a depression in terms of like, I don't like to be like this. Yeah.
Maybe it's seasonal
and honestly, the election is fully now. So that's really what it all is. Just like the doomsday around the whole situation, like readers, maybe we should reach out to you right now and say this. If you're feeling a malaise and you're feeling bad and you're feeling like shit, you are not alone. Let's just say that to sort of funnel it into a productive moment.
Yes. And we hope you are
taking all you can. Care of yourself.
There you go.
Can I tell you something that made me happy last night?
Yes.
I fell into this wormhole, which was watching pop stars and music stars watch people cover their songs.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with this.
To me, this was a serotonin boost moment.
Oh.
Like, because watching, like, these up-and-coming artists and singers, like, get the criticism from, like some woman getting a positive critique from Christina Aguilera on her cover of Beautiful. That woman was Von Zell Solomon, by the way.
Von Zell.
Yeah, it's like Von Zell's cover of Beautiful, and Christina's like, Von Zell, it's amazing. Your riffs are Whitney-esque. It's stunning. Like, your voice is so effortless and beautiful. And watching them receive that notice from this person they obviously idolize was heartwarming. And that's nice. I think it might have been like, I don't know what website it was on. Like, I want to say Vogue, something like that. But that's wrong.
Vogue. Sorry, I've arrived at being stoned and also tired. And I was gonna like make up a fake website that you would have found that video on, and instead all I could do was
and all you could do was turn to absolute soup.
Vogue.
I am going to be shady. I fell into a 73 questions wormhole because I love Vogue 73 questions. I mean, what faggot doesn't?
Borat. Yeah.
No, bitch. I will get to Borat though, because
we'll get to Borat.
We've both seen and we loved.
Which the 73 questions did you watch?
Girl, I found, first of all, there's Architectural Digest Home Tours, yes, and there's 73 yes. Questions Vogue. Both of these things are amazing. And I want to shout out the Architectural Digest Home Tour of Patrick Dempsey. I am throbbing for him. He has never looked better in his life. McDreamy is getting better with age. And if you want proof, watch the Architectural Digest Home Tour of Patrick Dempsey. That man is smoking hot. But Vogue 73 questions, I unfortunately stumbled upon Neil Patrick Harris's, and there was some cringe moments.
Oh no. Okay, so first of all, let's pause. Are we doing the hashtag hot dog equivalent of this with Neil Patrick Harris? Do we have to like do this every single time we talk about someone who's more successful than us?
This is why social media is bad, and I'm gonna bring it back because we even have to have this discussion. Because let me say something. As Americans, as gay Americans, we should be able to say the Neil Patrick Harris Vogue 73 questions was cringe. That should be an American right. So social media getting in my head about saying that, there's a problem.
I raised that question, but I think I already know the answer. It is sort of rhetorical in a way where I am like, I think that it is not, like, literally this is me and my rhetoric and saying that we're not like kind of crossing our fingers, making sure it gets seen, but it's because we secretly like him. Like, no, that's so warped to me. I will not get over this person. Ew. If you're listening, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you. Just kidding. And we're just continuing the game where we threaten our listeners. And anyway,
it crossed the line when they said his mouth should be used for something else other than talking. I was like,
I'm sorry. And then if you're quoting directly, they used it pronouns.
Well, I mean, just because they really wanted to be vague.
I don't know about that.
As soon as
you call someone else an it, I'm like, ew, that is literally dehumanizing, and you should go fuck yourself. You know what? This is the thing. And like, I don't have to reserve empathy for every single, even as a socialist who wants human liberation, I don't have to reserve empathy for every single person on this planet, especially when they fucking endanger someone else's. Okay. Yep. And that is, I might be taking this too far, but referring to someone as an it is a form of endangerment, honey.
We have to delete Soch.
We have to delete Soch. It's so bad.
It's so bad. Because guess what? We could just be having a whole other discussion.
Okay, babe, listen. Do you know what I've done with Instagram that I think has helped loads?
Tell me. Loads. Oh! It's loads.
Loads. So on the new iOS, so this is for my iPhone users. On the new iOS, there's a thing called the app library where you can hide little screens, like, you know, certain pages of apps you can just hide. And so it won't show up on your screen. So I deleted Instagram, but I kept it in my app library. And then I've turned off notifications as well. So those are the two things that have to happen, two important things that each sort of help the other. Take it off your home screen and then turn notifications off. So that way, I have to like consciously pull down my spotlight search and then type in Instagram to open it. And then I only see like, you know, the notifications that have like accumulated since the last time. And then I see like a couple DMs maybe, and I'll go, okay, this is all manageable. And it's not me constantly pacifying myself with this stupid fucking app with pictures. So that's my little tip to you and to the readers, Matt. To maybe do that.
I mean, I've deleted other apps too. I fully deleted the sex dating app that everyone uses because it was just getting...
Also worthless.
Yeah.
Also worthless.
Waste of time.
Yeah. I deleted Raya because I realized, I was like, wait a minute, I only get...
Oh yeah, you were having a Raya moment.
Well, because Nicole Byer says this too. It's like that she was on the wait list for years. Same.
I remember that.
And then when she got on it, she was like, oh, I'm not matching with anybody because it's all burners who are just burners. I'm sorry. Anyone who goes to Burning Man, thank you for listening. but that is like the crowd. That's like the vibe. And it's just like so like, and like the music taste on these people, I gotta shut it down. I'm so sorry that you are still listening to... I can't even make up a band right now. You're still listening to fucking like Passion Pit. I don't know. See,
Passion Pit. Now but the thing is, you landed on exactly. No, but we love Passion Pit. But that's it, hun. It took you a minute. You were soaring in the air there. We were in slow motion, and then you Nadia Comaneci'd the landing. Passion Pit was the one. 10.
A 10.
10's on the board. Anyway. That is 100% it. I feel like I'm dating on Tinder in college again. You know what I mean?
It's
like, it took me back to that place of like, let's go grab an IPA. You know what I mean? Like, you literally know what I'm talking about, though.
I absolutely do. And I
feel like, do you know how many IPAs I've drank with men?
Oh, no. Too many.
So many.
Beautiful. Beautiful voice. Your voices, you've never sounded better.
You know, before, thank you for saying that, and I'm really proud of my ZipRecruiter hook.
Yes, yeah, so you might not listen to it on this episode, but if you get the ad... Oh, first of all, we also have to talk about the ad choices on this show.
Yes, can we be transparent for a second? We are getting a lot of feedback that the U.S. military is sort of advertising on this podcast. Mama, that's going to be an iHeartRadio thing and not a Las Culturistas thing.
But we do, we take enough responsibility to flag this to our producers so that they can get to the bottom of what the hell is going on. Well, apparently with this military ad, this recruitment ad that you only get on Spotify,
I heard it.
But so no one at iHeart knows how it made it onto the episode. We've told them in the past that we do not want that kind of advertising on our show. So we're so sorry that made its way to your ears. Our values do not align with the military industrial complex in any way. So that there you have it.
Also, just want to say, if ever there's an ad that's like scary, I've been getting a lot of listeners saying, there's so many scary ads on Las Culturistas, like the beginning, like a very like sort of in-depth description of how a murder happened.
Oh no.
I'm very, very, very concerned about that aspect. And because I want the Las Culturistas listening experience to be, you know, peaceful.
Even as we threaten to beat the shit out of certain people.
If ever our audience feels endangered, I want that to be very explicitly clear that's coming from us. You know what yes. I mean? Not the
exactly,
ads.
Exactly. But that's full transparency for you. Matt, I think, was going to bring up how he made up a jingle for ZipRecruiter that I think is just beautiful.
Oh, it's the new bop. It's the new hook.
Not as good as BetterHelp.
Well, you know, it remains to be seen. I don't think it's as simple as BetterHelp.
Yeah, BetterHelp is beautifully simple.
If you need help, BetterHelp. Okay, so then this is what I wanted to bring up. I began BetterHelp. I actually started doing it. Yes,
what
a peek behind the curtain. Sometimes when we say we've used things for ads, we're lying.
No.
Okay, wait. A peek behind the curtain. No, I always try out samples if we get them. But I started using it, and it's weird. Like, you text a bunch in the beginning with the person, and I'm like trying to move it to video, but I feel nervous about moving it to video.
It's like dating,
and I'm like, maybe is that like a thing I need to talk about? The fact that I'm like nervous to move this to video. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's worth talking. I think that's just
probably just shut
a
up
procedural
and do it.
Thing with the app. But yeah, I mean, I would say stick with it until you get to the video stage, and then even after that, I would say like maybe put in two or three sessions, unless you immediately know that it's not going to work, that it's not a good fit.
I'm kind of like going back and forth about it because I feel like the questions have been very general, and I think he forgot one big thing that I told him.
Well, that's
so I was like, I don't know, maybe I might switch.
Yeah. If there are mental health professionals in the Los Angeles area who can recommend to Matt Rotter someone who is doing telehealth sessions and is accepting
also, I would go sit outside. I mean, I think that people can go
are
sit
people
outside.
Doing that?
Think about it, though. If you went over to someone's house and sat in their backyard 6 feet away, you know what
sure.
I mean? If yeah. they have that. I don't know why I picture in my head therapists living in these gorgeous homes. I'm picturing like my therapist in like a Martha Stewart style like 800 acre home like like in Nicole Kidman's 73 Questions.
Oh, that's
like
right.
Like a farm.
Like a farm. Tina Fey's office in season 2 of Kimmy Schmidt when she plays a therapist is
yeah.
so gorgeous and
yeah.
so chic and like I'm like that's like TV therapist, you know?
Yes.
It's like
In like a sweater cape.
Oh my God. Molly's therapist in Insecure lives in the most gigantic, gorgeous house you've ever seen. And
yeah.
I'm just like,
I wonder if that was like a deliberate
therapist.
Choice. Like to have
I'm
the
sure
therapist be luxe. Probably, yes.
Regal, luxe, in the airiest, most naturally lit house I've ever seen. And I want to live there so badly.
Like, I know if I did therapy in an open room with high ceilings, it would be an immediate breakthrough. If I'm doing therapy, like, in a little box, it might take a while.
That's right.
I need to feel.
You need to feel.
The glamour.
And the light.
The light. It's true. Natural light's very important to me. It's not something that I just talk about all the time, but natural light's very important to me.
You haven't brought this up. Talk about why natural light is important to you.
I love it. It's. I feel more creative when there's more natural light.
Yes.
Come on. I can't. That's why New York is like not happening. You're always in like a dim orange light in New York. You know what I mean? Like the PM times in New York, they're not fun.
I know. Huh? I know. They're not.
They're
fun.
So it's so cramped. Like every light feels artificial. That's. I guess that's another reason why I like LA. It's just more in touch with daylight.
Oh, we're about to come up. We're coming up on daylight savings time.
Mother
Jester. I mean, this is really going to fuck shit up for me. I'm like kind of, and then the election's going to happen 2 days later. I am, you're going to see my moods dip even lower if they haven't bottomed out already, dear.
Oh,
precious
your
one.
Moods. Is November 7th the last show?
Yes, for a while.
Just getting one in after the election, one in after the big event.
You know.
Ooh, that's going to be something.
Or, yeah, we'll see. What was I going to bring up? Oh, well, as soon as you commit to a therapist, I will append my end of that deal.
Well, I was going to bring that up. the thing is, I don't know whether to be strident on you with this anymore, because I know that you're in a stressful situation and you need your little vices. So,
but no,
it is bad for you, and I do wish for you to stop. Like, I wish that you could, you know, get those vices out by exercising, you know, like offering for a brief run, or, you know, like cooking a meal, or drawing a piece of art. Like, get your stress out in one of those healthy ways. But then again, I'm just like, whatever.
No. I don't want to make excuses for it. And you should hold me accountable as a friend.
I'm holding you accountable then. Okay, fine. I'm firmly on the other side of it now. If I even hear whispers, and I have other contacts at your job, that you've been stepping out to take a cigarette break.
Who said this?
No, I'm
reveal your sources. Reveal them.
You know who my sources are.
I don't know. I don't think they're the ones that I think are the source.
Don't think too hard.
Wait, but no, she shouldn't be telling you that.
No, she isn't. I'm saying I can find out. I have the ability to find out. I'm not saying she said anything. But I know. The thing about me is it always gets back to me. And you should fear me.
I don't understand the people who say that. You know, like, there's always been people who've been like,
that I genuinely believe that. I always know when this is happening. Yeah.
I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I have ears everywhere. I'm like, are you checking in with? I'm like, what is your system of dissemination?
It means
dissemination
that whenever
here?
Anyone says that, it means that they are a huge shit talker.
Exactly. Yes.
It means they personally, in their bones, have the impulse to gossip.
Oh, yes, that's absolutely true.
But we're gossips.
We're gossips, but...
We are!
We are. There's no but. And there's no reason to really, qualify it. Yeah.
Don't tell me nothing. Don't tell me nothing.
Sometimes when you know what we know, there's no other recourse but to gossip. You have no other option but to gossip.
I mean, okay? Come on. Spread the word.
Word.
Did you know there's a new Quiplash out?
I was the one who texted the thread. I was like, guys, there's a new Jackbox Party Pack, number 7.
We should organize a Quiplash moment soon. Or you know what? Like, I actually am at this point now where I kind of want to get into video games. Like, but I wonder if that would... See, it would just be another thing to occupy time with that isn't social media while I'm in the house.
I agree. If you subscribe to replacement theory or just replacement in as a concept in terms of addiction, because I feel like I am dealing with this with an addiction to social media. Mm-hmm. I can very parallel lines it against my addiction to cigarettes. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to replace it with something. So I feel like this is a great, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful option for you. And oh my God, you saying that excites me so much.
Mm-hmm. I think that actually I haven't said one other thing on the pod that happened, which is contributing to all this, I think, in a major way, which is that, and I think I can say this, Jared and I did break up. But the thing is, it wasn't dramatic or anything or weird or anything, but that is something that happened. And we're still extremely close, and he's literally the best person. But it still did happen, and sometimes I don't remind myself that that's true when I'm like wallowing in whatever. I'm like, well, this did just happen. So
it just happened. And you have been very human and like emotionally in touch with yourself and with Jared throughout this whole process. So of course you're going to be affected by it.
Yeah.
Just because it wasn't dramatic doesn't mean that it's not impactful, you know?
Yeah. Also quarantine, just like, because when you're in a relationship in quarantine, that's like it's the person's an everyday presence in your life.
Yes.
And so
yes.
When that changes, it's like, it's still tough. Like I keep, my heart keeps going out to like anyone that's going through a divorce at this time. Like sometimes I see that Kelly Clarkson is doing so many things and like she's so everywhere right now. And I know she's going through that. And I'm just like, I hope that this is all productive. I'm sure that working, so much is like something that's really helping her, and like I know she loves her kids so much, but my heart just goes out to her and anyone that's like had a substantial like years long relationship that ended because of this, because it makes the whole thing feel even more, why the fuck did we have to go through this frustrated with like the fact that there's no leadership, etc. This has to be such a crazy fucking time. Such like a cosmic shift that we went through. Seriously.
I know. I have nothing to add. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. And then I remember, like, I am grateful that I've gotten to work and stuff. So it's just, and you're working, like, you're fucking busy as a damn rat.
Well, here's something.
Busy as a damn rat.
Busy as a damn rat. Here's something I want to bring up. Because I feel like in some way, me posting about going to work and doing my job it might like stir up emotions in certain people, not in the same justifiable way as it would stir up someone who would use a hashtag for a show after whatever. I can't get over this person. Well, because I saw someone post this, and I don't know how to feel about this because I can see both sides of it. Someone posted a thing that I generally agree with, but they were like I don't remember who, but it was an actor, someone of note. I don't even think they were, but that doesn't matter. It's not relevant. Okay. They posted something on Instagram that was like, "Hey guys, for anyone who's posting their self tapes right now, just know that it's really triggering for people who can't find work as artists and actors, and like really start to ask yourself who that's for, like blah 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 blah. Like, is this just like you like trying to like self-indulge or whatever?" Which is like, that's the whole point of social media in a lot of ways. That's one function of it. But I understand that it's triggering to, like, I don't know, flaunt the fact that you're getting opportunities, but even the audition itself is not an opportunity intrinsically. But anyway, but then the other side of it is like, who cares? It's like, you're not like,
there's just too much.
I don't know.
This is all leading me back to the same place, which is this. There's just too much there. Like, social media is evil. Like, if you feel that, I shouldn't have to know that. You know what I mean? Like, as someone who has, I did a bit about a self tape once, and then you're saying, do I have to feel bad about doing that? Like, for me, it's just, for me, literally everything I post is just to, like, for people that follow me to see it because I think they'd get like something, a kick out of it or whatever, or like whatever. Or
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's not all solely for you. You know what I mean? Like, of course,
it's
part of the disease. Like, there is vanity in the posting of it all and like the sharing of it all, but not everything is like nefarious, you know? Like, and doesn't, I just would hope that people that are going to say something like that would stop and think first about why they need to say that. You know what I mean? Like, is that something they need to say?
You're throwing it back at them. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I don't, why are you bothered about that? Just don't follow the person, you know?
Sure.
That's the choice you can make. And then the message that you send could be in the unfollow of it all. But people want to get their voice heard.
I can't stop thinking about that person. And I actually should evict that person from my mind, because.
But they wouldn't be there if it weren't for social media. So I don't know. I'm just talking myself into eventually getting rid of it all. But can I tell you something that's also something I feel is like, I can't delete Soch because we have to still promote the podcast. And I'm like, you know what? People will find the podcast.
That's what I'm saying. People will find the podcast. And I've even had that thought too, where I'm like, oh, you know, like, is this a weird fixture in my social media now? Like, not a weird fixture, but is this just something that I'm going to be expected to do every single week? And I feel like the people who will listen to it will listen to it. And I feel like we're the way we get new listeners, sorry, readers, we're just talking about, like, growth right now. But the way we get new listeners is from, like, doing other shows and like being on other things. We're not getting more listeners from the posts. You know what I'm saying?
I think that like there's like a weird correlation I have in my mind with like the existence and success of things I'm doing with social media. Like, I feel like for me, they're like that social media is important in a way that's not justified. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think there's like something playing in, and that's just part of the addiction of it all. I don't know. It's so interesting and funny that we're talking about this, because even in the days up to recording this episode, I was like, I wonder if on the podcast I'll bring up that like I'm fully addicted to social, Like, it's so taken over my life for the past 4 days, like, that I was like, I wonder if that's something I can even be honest about, because it's so embarrassing how all-encompassing it is.
I get why you would be embarrassed by it, but it's like, for the most part, people our age are kind of...
That's what it is.
In similar neighborhoods, like, in terms of, like, are the way we engage with it, we're all kind of, like, going for that same dopamine hit for the same reasons. Just about as often as anyone else is doing it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I felt shameful telling my therapist, oh, yeah, well, I do this toxic social media behavior this many times a day, and I check social media this often. And then that kind of tied into, like, my whole impulse around, like, not caring about how I did in something or how my work is, like, I don't, how I self-assess my work.
Yeah.
Because really, as soon as I walk off stage from, like, my own piece, I'm not thinking about how I did. I'm not asking myself, how do you think you did? I'm going,
What are they saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, also what I'm realizing right now is the relationship you have with social media actually does replace relationships that you have with human beings, because it's a relationship that you care about and, like, invest in. Like, we're all invested in our relationships with social media, and it's just weird. And I think says something about the current time that, like, I am on social media caring about that aspect of my life, I think, a lot more than I've talked to or actively caring about real human relationships in my life that actually matter and are meaningful. And that's when I know that we might be in a situation here that, if you really step outside of it, is not going anywhere positive.
Exactly. I, like, FaceTimed with Joel Kim Booster for the first time in so long last week. And I was like, oh yeah, like, this is what, like, the friendship is. It's not like me and him checking in on each other's, like, Insta stories.
Yeah.
Because even that just feels cursory, and it feels like, okay, I'm not going to remember this, like, little exchange that we had in our DMs, like, in 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? So it's
absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
This is, like, the FaceTime conversation is substantive. It lives in the memory of the friendship in a more significant way than, like a check-in over DMs, like, for some reason feels, like, so watered down. I don't know, in my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you're right. It's like, we're all invested in social media as if it's a friendship, as if it's a relationship, in the same way that, like, New York is the fifth character in Sex and the City.
Absolutely. They are, and then it's a huge fucking deal. Like, it's like, it feels like a breakup in the show when Miranda fucking goes to Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But it
Miranda
does,
did it right.
Well, she was really being a jerk about Brooklyn, but then when she went there, she truly fell in love. And Brooklyn looked so beautiful in the show.
It looked so beautiful in the show. She, like, was in Brooklyn Heights.
Brooklyn is fucking gorgeous.
It's unbelievable. It's the most beautiful. It's the most beautiful.
Did you know that out of everyone that, quote unquote, like, is a regular listener of this podcast, Brooklyn is by far the most listeners are in Brooklyn.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, we love you, Brooklyn.
Brooklyn girls. And more people in Chicago than LA.
Interesting.
Isn't that fun, eh? What's up, Chicago?
Okay. What's
Hi,
up, Chicago?
Chicago. We love Chicago.
We love the Chicago show. The I Don't Think So Honey show was so fun. Matt wasn't there.
I was not there, but I heard it was great. Oh, God. Hosting with Pat is so fun, is it not?
Hosting with Pat is so fun. I mean, can we just say, there is not a funnier person on this planet than Pat Regan.
Absolutely not. I miss him. See, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Like, I could be spending this some of more of my time, like, seeing what the fuck is up with Pat. You know what
and
I mean?
Pat's,
like,
figured it out. Pat's off all social. Pat's figured it. He's figured it out. And he's never been happier, I think. I can speak on his behalf.
I love that. And I have to say, also, the other thing, too, is, like, I think, like, ultimately, we've been doing this for a while, and you forget, like, what a social life means. You know what I mean? Like, you, that, especially, like, when it was a fixture of our lives for so long, like, I don't want to be anxious about seeing other people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to feel weird about planning a time. Like, it just, the whole thing is just tough.
And see, I don't even want to, And not to bring this back to this darkness in our lives, but I don't want my social life for my interactions to be defined by intellectual response to what some fucking idiot says on social media about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want that to take up any space in my
brain. When you know for sure that there are people in your life who fill it with the opposite of that feeling.
Exactly.
And it's time you could be spending investing in that and not this. But unfortunately, you know, like as we saw in The Social Dilemma on Netflix, this is all designed to addict us.
Yes.
You know what
yes,
I mean? So yes. And it is working very well. And that's what they say in the documentary. I can't believe it's taken us this long in this conversation to bring up this documentary, because it so spells out why. Mm-hmm. Is that there is a design element to this. It is addictive by nature. And there's ways to get you more and more addicted, that just because we're humans and we are designed to want and need some things, we think we're basically slaves to this thing.
Yeah. I still have not finished Social Dilemma, unfortunately, because I maybe have the same attitude that you have towards Trick Mirror, where I'm like, I'm not going to like what I see.
Yeah, it's scary. And the thing is, I just have to fucking get over it. But just know The Social Dilemma, like, it pretty much spells it all out. And if it's going to help anyone step away from something toxic, then I really recommend watching it. If you're the kind of person who needs to be scared.
You need to be scared. Reader, I'm so sorry. I've said this to Matt so many times, but Matt will be obsessed with the essay that she writes about when she was on this teen reality show.
I'm going to start reading it right after this.
It's the second one. You're going to love it. Read it tonight. Honestly, please do. And it's so good. And then she writes, she has one about ecstasy that's so good. She has one about like Houston, Texas. Anyway, something that we both have watched though is Borat subsequent movie film.
Wow. Yes. Now this is, I guess, pretty much the culture of the week. I would say probably is Borat 2. And you know, my initial thoughts are that it is fucking funny. I definitely thought maybe it was a little overlong, but the star of it all is Ms. Maria, who plays his daughter, Maria Bakalova. I think her name is.
Oh my God, so good.
She was unbelievable. She, to me, could take over the world. Like, she is so brave. What she has to do, those were some scary situations.
And for her to be in that room alone with, I mean, I'm just talking about the interview portion.
Oh,
for her to like fake that entire interaction. Like, she was able to get Rudy to the back of, to that other room.
Yeah, I mean, look, he went in a room with that girl. I understand what a lot of people are saying about the editing of it all. Like, yes, was it edited choppily, like, that wants to present something as truth? Yes. But the fact of the matter is, it's kind of like saying, like, but the stores that burnt down during the protests for George Floyd. It's like, you guys, look at the bigger issue here. He went into a back room with this girl, and it was, like,
and
low lights. And, like, we're touching. It was so inappropriate. And also, he was making inappropriate comments the whole time. Also, not for nothing, but come on, guys. Was he really tucking in a shirt or untucking a shirt or whatever? Like, the whole thing that he doesn't know enough to not be in that situation is very scary. He's one of the most powerful people in America right now. And that he didn't know enough to not be in a situation that even could be presented to us like that in any way is really fucked up. He's a creep.
I'm just amazed by Maria Bakalova, because it's like...
ugh, killed it.
Because just... I don't know. Just, and she like gave you a convincing performance as like this daughter who wants to get to know her father. And like, that's the defining relate. It felt like a Cormac McCarthy story. It felt like The Road. It felt like this father and daughter like traveling together.
Well, because he's such a genius. It's earnest. They're really playing the characters. And so it really works, and it's tonally so dead on. Like, they just killed it in casting her, too.
And we should just talk about maybe the base, like, reality of Sacha Baron Cohen's characters, which is that they are all so offensive. so offensive and so you can make an argument for all of his characters that he should not be playing these characters. But even with Bruno, I'm like, see, that's like such an extreme caricature of a gay man.
I think it works.
I'm like, you know what? And he's like actually done as like an actor and a performer and like whatever. It's like he has like, you can tell he's like done the work as far as like knowing who that character is.
Yeah.
And I think he's even done that with Borat, where it's like, he learned like Kazakh. He like learned like the language, like to play the, I'm not saying that like gives him a pass, but I'm saying it like he's approaching this in a way that kind of warrants some viewing of this.
It's also funny.
It's so like,
it's also
funny.
So fucking funny. And that does matter. Like, you have to earn these things. If he was out here doing these things and it was unearned and it wasn't funny, we would
sniff that out right away, especially in the year 2020. You sniff that out right away and you're like, oh God, fuck this dude. We're not watching this.
I fucking loved that they turned the sidekicky guy from the first movie into the love seat. In the first scene when he realizes he's sitting on his friend and the penis is just
the dick is
I mean, to me, there's almost nothing funnier than in Bruno when the dick is swinging around and the little pee hole screams, Bruno!
Bruno!
Like, I thought it was so fucking funny.
I mean, 2 seconds in, I was laughing. Like, just as soon as he said, like, wah, wah, wee, wah stays funny, unfortunately.
They also, like, really earned in the movie why they were able to even do a second one. Because I was thinking, like, oh, how will they do a second one? He's so famous, he can't fool anyone. And then they literally just made that part of the plot. Like, Borat is very famous. Everyone knows him. So he's like, I need to disguise. Genius. And then he gets in disguise. Also, I'm sorry, but... It just the Borat voice thing, it is funny.
And
I don't know.
Borat voice is
it is
so
funny.
It's so funny. Like
my wife is funny again.
My wife is has always been funny to me. And even when people use it ironically, I'm like, that's my wife is so
it's
funny.
My wife is comedy, and that's actually Real Culture number 104. My wife is comedy.
Like, my chrom is so funny. Regine. First of all, the storybook in this where about the girl who touches herself and then gets swallowed up in vagina. It's so funny. It's so good. And the babysitter, what an
the babysitter.
Angel.
Your titties will not keep you from drowning. You need to learn how to swim.
You're a pretty girl. She was like, I was like, oh my God, this person
it was
is,
genuinely touching and
she
good.
She was concerned and like.
So funny.
But even to have Maria, I don't know if it was like a Linnell thing, because I know Linnell was in the first one and like she kind of was like in on it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard much about this woman, but I feel like even Maria as the daughter, like in the car, was like, playing it so real and grounded.
Yeah.
Like as this girl who's like receiving this, like this, like kind of attention from someone else, that's not her father. And like not knowing how to process it. I'm like, wait, there are like some really like human things to this.
That being said, there were some people on Twitter saying they were crying about the ending. And I don't think so, honey, that like, I don't know about crying.
It's a nice end. It's a heartwarming ending.
But ultimately it's Borat 2 and we can't be crying tears. You know what I mean?
But maybe it's earned. There's some earned emotion because it's like it's a 14-year-old character, at least from the first movie to now. It's like they've seen Borat as a fixture in the culture. I'm obsessed with Borat.
I love
it.
Do you
remember when you saw
100%.
It? I remember it so clearly.
My AP, and this was probably bad of him to do, but my AP European history teacher told us all to go see it. He was,
oh,
we were I think 15. And
16, 15,
yeah,
16.
Yeah, Dr. Fernando was like, you guys have to check out this movie. I mean, you really shouldn't go, but like, it's gonna be funny. And we were, and then this other guy that taught at the school, who was like the AP US teacher, was also like egging it on. And so all my friends in high school went to go see it, and it was just, it was such a cultural moment. Like Borat took over. It was so funny in a real way and shocking.
Jesse David Fox tweeted this. He was like, my memory of Borat, my like memory and conception of, or perception, whatever, of Borat was, it was this cultural phenomenon and this gigantic smash hit success at the box office. Mm-hmm, and that made like so much money. But then actually, if you look at the returns of that week, it didn't really make too much money.
That's crazy. Cause it does seem like this monster hit. Like he feels almost as culturally relevant as Austin Powers, which were actually huge films. And I will say a big part of me does miss that type of comedy, like big character comedy, like that's done really well. So the fact that this is back and people seem to be responding to it well gives me some hope that maybe we'll see some more character-driven stuff going forward, because when that's done well, it's so fun.
It's so fun. And that's what I'm saying. Like, he does this well. He does it well. Even when the movie is, like, a total C+, B-minus, like Bruno, it's not a great film, and it's definitely not as good as Borat.
It just kind of loses the plot a little bit, but it's so funny.
It's still so funny.
Yeah. It's Brittany Gastineau or whatever, one of the Gastineau girls being like,
oh, yeah,
abort it, about him being like, do we keep it or abort it? And she's like, abort it. And then when they were talking about how the fetus needed to lose weight, like, to me, that was incredibly funny because he got her to do that.
Yes,
and that,
yes.
And it was a comment on what kind of play. It's honestly a genius moment in this quote unquote screenplay, because you immediately get like, this is a town where people will do anything to get on camera.
Right, exactly.
Like they will play a game called Keep It or Abort It, which sets the table for his character so well. And the fact that she's a real person who many of us watched a reality show about is just so insane and genius of him to include.
Genius, but they are screenplays, because the first Borat was nominated for the Oscar, wasn't it?
Was it?
For a screenwriting Oscar. Yeah, let me look this up.
Oh, yeah, that would be good to know. There's been so many great comedy films that have not gotten the screenplay Oscar nominations.
Agree.
Merely because they're comedy. I mean, Mean Girls should have one. Clueless should be a screenplay award Oscar winner.
Oh, my God. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, there's just been a lot of good stuff that...
It was nominated for Best Adapted, but then the Departed won, of course.
Well,
2079th Academy Awards.
You know what other comedy nomination screenplay I love? My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh my God, Nia.
Yeah.
Canadian Queen.
She deserved it, and it was such a like cultural phenomenon. We talked about that movie almost exclusively on the George Severus episode.
That's right. Wonderful movie.
I love that nom. And also, of course, Bridesmaids.
I feel like this was a successful sequel too, which was not going to be a given. And I feel like, Sacha Baron Cohen really like stuck the landing just in terms of making this work and not like fully questioning its existence. You're like, it is a different America now. And it is kind of fun to think about Borat in Trump country and what he would respond to.
I was also thinking about how, and I don't mean to be a narc here, I'm not trying to be narky with this, but when in the film, they're like, it's quarantine, we have to shut down. And he sort of fully continued and going to places where he was not in a public health sense advised to be with a crew. I was kind of thinking to myself, like, at what point is it like, kind of shitty that he's still doing this, but then I was really happy to have the art.
But I feel like in the movie, this is a spoiler for anybody who hasn't watched this, but in the movie when lockdown starts, he just lives with these two men in their cabin, and then it's implied that weeks and weeks and weeks go by, because it goes from March, which is when lockdown started, to June, which is when that rally happens where he finds his daughter again. Oh, sorry, there's some spoilers. Mm-hmm. So it's implied that Sacha Baron Cohen as Borat lived in this house with the crew and these two men for 3 months, which does not add up to me.
No.
And I feel like maybe those men were actors. Yeah, I don't want to narc either, but and that shouldn't take away from the sort of art that is Borat's subsequent movie.
It makes it even more brave, really.
Exactly. Oh, they were not actors and he lived with them for 5 days, hot executive producer Anna says. Okay, interesting.
Do you remember in Bruno, the orgy thing? When he was in that orgy in Bruno, when pretending to be straight, like, there was like a whole scene where he literally had infiltrated a real orgy.
That's right. And then he keeps trying to like have sex with that one guy. And then
and he's like, I'm fucking a pussy. Why would I fuck you when I can fuck? And then the woman's like, he's fucking a pussy. He doesn't want you. He wants pussy. Okay. He wants my pussy.
They're just on the dirtiest mattress on the floor. Literally yelling gross. At Bruno.
And then he gets the shit beat out of him by that blonde lady. I don't know. To me, it's like pretty. Where is the Oscars for him?
Give Pulitzer him an Prize. Oscar.
Nobel Prize.
I think he is so. I think he's so genius. Did you ever see The Dictator?
No, I actually have not seen The Dictator because I was I was a little burnt out on North Korea comedy at the time. I feel like it was right after the James Franco one, right?
Before. It was before.
Really?
Yeah, it was before, but it was him, and it was like Jason Mantzoukas. I thought it was great. I thought it was pretty fun too. It's not like his best, mm-hmm. And obviously
it was
like,
entirely scripted, right?
That was entirely scripted, and it was not shot like a mockumentary or like
right.
Oh my god, I just also Borat nude to me is not funny because it's like he has a good body. Sacha Baron Cohen has like a hot bod.
Do you think?
I think a little bit, yeah.
I don't see him sexually, but I appreciate that many do.
I count myself among the people who see him sexually.
Maybe it's just I can't, because the only ever time you see him nude pretty much is in the Borat outfit. So maybe it's just the outfit not being super flattering that's taking it away from me. I would love to see him fully nude, is what I'm saying. Take off the little thing. Get naked. OnlyFans. Get OnlyFans. I now subscribe to three OnlyFans.
Final thoughts on Borat 2. I felt like it was important for us to talk about this.
Final thoughts on Borat 2 are Sacha Baron Cohen icon, Maria, young actress to watch.
Yes.
To me, honestly, shows like Margot Robbie level promise and potential.
Oh my God.
But with a more explicitly comedy angle, which is dangerous. And we should be looking out for her. And
she's Bulgarian, Bulgarian actress.
Well, she's breaking worldwide.
Yes, yes.
And I would say, great piece of comedy, though, a tad over long.
Yeah, it was longer than the first, which I thought was interesting.
Movies are too long, and that's actually a Roller Coaster number 19. Movies are too long. But, you know, that's just, it's a critique I have with everything.
Amazing that he was able to get that Giuliani moment and, like, have it released the week it did and have it be a true capital S story that dominated the news.
Did you read the Caroline Giuliani piece?
I did not read the Caroline Giuliani piece. I heard it was lovely and she, you know, is on the right side of things.
Yeah, she rocks.
But it's like, God, like the Ron Paul thing in Bruno is so fucking wild. And like,
that was nuts.
That was nuts. I mean, that was like, he was like sexually assaulting Ron Paul.
No, yeah, let's that was just, exactly what that was. I'm really happy you brought it up because I would hate to not mention that. That is true.
Like,
that was nuts. But it did. Was nuts. The last line, man, but I couldn't even stop RuPaul. That to me was so funny. Like, the whole thing is too much, but the punchline ultimately did make me fall on the ground.
Oh my God.
I couldn't even stop RuPaul.
I love Bruno so much.
And this is the thing, readers. Like, thank you for meeting us where we're at right now. And we love you very much. And I think that we are not alone here. And everyone's kind of like, Jesus Christ, the election, general panic about the existence of us all going forward. What is happening? So we're there too. Anyway. So a big old general, I don't think so, honey, to everything. But let's move into the segment and begin with I don't think so, honey. I do have one. I have a premise.
Okay, interesting. This is Matt's premise-based I don't think so, honey.
Okay, maybe it's not a premise. I'd have an idea for an I don't think so, honey.
Okay, this is Matt's I don't think so, honey, and his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Mitch McConnell being purple. He looks dead to me. Yeah. I have been to open casket wakes and seen people in caskets there that look more alive than Mitch McConnell. What is going on? It literally looks like a curse is keeping him alive.
Yeah,
there's something deeply going on there. And if we're going to harp everyone in America on the age of Biden and consistently dig into this thing of he's old, he's senile. What exactly is going on with your girl, Mitch, then? Because that looks haunted. That looks haunted. Like the haunt, all the houses that aren't haunted because of quarantine right now, are the haunts are all going to Mitch McConnell and keeping him alive in chances. Barney the dinosaur is not as purple as this bitch. I don't think so, honey, that color.
And that's 1 minute. Barney the dinosaur. That's the title of app, honestly.
Darn Barney the dinosaur.
Parentheses, Matt and Bowen get too high again.
For real this time.
Matt and Bowen are high and tired.
No, we can't do tired culture. I don't think so, honey. You talked about the traveling last week. That I forgot to bring up. You are king of I'm so tired.
I am tired culture. The moment I knew culture was for me, the culture that made me say culture is for me was being tired and made me go, I am tired culture.
That's rule of culture number 46. Bowen is tired culture.
You
actually are the most alive culture of the moment. So enjoy it, bitch. So is it time?
It's time for me. Oh, God.
Okay, Bowen.
Yeah.
Do you have something that you're thinking of that you could do? A premise?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
okay, here we go. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Bacon, egg, and cheese. You are ruining my ass so much. Why am I eating you every single day? You are what's keeping me in this bad dietary cycle. It's another... Look, I have a third addiction, everybody. Ready to hear it? BEC, okay? BEC is my third addiction. Worse than the cigarettes, because at least there's no fucking pork fat in it. Okay, you are you listening to me? There's no pork fat.
30 seconds.
Pork fat and processed cheese product. bacon, egg, and cheese. You're the most delicious thing in the world, and I can't. I wish I knew how to quit you. In the words of Jake, or was it Heath? It was Jake. And I pray that
15 seconds.
One day you lose your status as a New York institution. I know the bodegas thrive on it, but. It's really killing our children's and me and your Bowen Yangs.
And that's 1 minute. It's killing our children's and our Bowen Yangs. That's actually rule of culture number 40.
Bacon, egg, and cheese.
It's killing our children's
and Bowen Yangs.
You know, for me, it's sausage, egg, and cheese.
You're a sausage queen?
And to quote Pat, that's just what works for me and my family.
I feel like bacon, if you're a bacon person, that's bottom culture. If you're a sausage person, that's top culture.
Yeah, to me, that makes a lot more sense. Because bacon is sort of like stylized and cute, and there's like a twist. And sausage is just like meat. It's me.
The casing.
And I have them at Starbucks every day when I get my, get this, don't get too hard. Pumpkin spice cold brew.
Yum.
Pumpkin spice cream cold brew. And
the cream.
Sausage, egg, and cheese on what I think is like a, I don't know, like a...
On a croissant bun? Flaky bun?
No, not a croissant. I forget what it is. Like it's like a English muffin, I guess, thing. Anyway.
Where are we at right now in the discourse with pumpkin spice? I feel like it's the backlash to the backlash to the backlash to the backlash or whatever.
This is social media comment culture.
No.
The fact that we can't just enjoy pumpkin spice.
I know, but I'm saying like year after year, it seems to like swing the other way where it's like, okay, this year we like it. And I'm like, well, guess what? I've always enjoyed it just fine. I'm not fanatic about it. I think every now and then I'll be like, oh, it's a crisp day in October. I'll have a pumpkin spice something.
You know what? It's very good, and that's why it's popular. And you can't not like the good thing just because a lot of people like it. Like, why? That's depriving yourself. Come out of the shadows, darling. We're drinking pumpkin spice. Come
out
join.
Of the shadows.
We're all in the park drinking pumpkin spice. You can join. You're invited to join. Why wouldn't you? Why do you want to be amongst the shadows?
Why would you?
Why do you want to be amongst the shadows?
This is such a good performance. God, you're such a talented orator. You really are.
You feel this way?
Of course I do. Matt is one of the most effective communicators. I'm what?
I feel you, Celessa.
No, Matt, you really are a light. I think about you at work in my despair and I smile. I go, oh, Matt.
I couldn't believe yesterday when I was smiling up at the TV, beaming at Bowen Yang on Saturday Night Live. I sometimes just beam at the TV.
Were you watching live?
I did watch live last night.
Oh my God. So you were watching when I was on, when
I was
doing
literally
it.
Watching while you were on stage. And I was like, this is live television. That's Bowen.
That's cute. That's fun.
Was it fun to sit next to Adele in a sketch?
It was so fun. She was so wonderful. I just think she's the best. And I feel so honored that I got to share it. I got to even share a frame with her, even at good nights, honey.
I wanted so badly there to be a big surprise that she was going to do a song, but then I was like, nah, she's clearly not ready.
I think she's very precious about her work, which is her right. And yes, she has every right to be proud. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, her work is so...
The bar is so high. Can you imagine? Like, that's... It's so crazy. Like, she's had literally... It's unprecedented success with her last two albums. Like, you have to give her time to feel good and comfortable with what she's going to output.
Any of these artists who are releasing music, it's like... Remember, like, when 25... She said that... She had a whole different album recorded for 25, but then Rick Rubin listened to it and was like, you could release this if you wanted to, but I don't think you'd be proud of it. And she was like, okay, well, I'm going to re-record everything and write completely new songs. Like, you have these, like, huge people, like, weighing in, which is, like, both good and bad. I'm sure it's, like, so stressful, but to have if Rick Rubin was like, you should probably think about doing this again, I'd be like, absolutely. But then it'd be like, I better make sure it meets a standard that Rick Rubin has set because he appreciates my work or whatever the relationship is. I'm like, that's something that like is that we kind of take for granted in terms of how these artists navigate their new work. It's like, oh yeah, you have so many stakeholders in this, which is maybe not the best thing, but also at the same time, it's like you have to think about that rubric constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
And they're dealing with everything we're talking about too on the biggest level. Like,
right,
we've talked about how, you know, when Adele kind of released that photo of her after her weight loss, like the way everyone in the world has something to say about it, like that's not a normal situation for someone to be at the center of. So
no.
She needs the emotional space to be able to create, not only just create as what I'm meaning to say, but also exist in the public eye in that way again. You know what I mean? Like that it's you need a lot of time to prepare for something like that, I would imagine.
Right.
So you gotta let her fly. You gotta let her be.
Oh my God. But literally her like singing her songs and she sounds fucking album quality. I'm like,
yeah.
And she makes it look so easy and it just comes out of her effortlessly.
Yes.
I'm sure it takes effort, but she makes it look so
well, she's
natural.
A fucking star. And I mean, like, she is like an uncommon breed of star.
Yeah.
She looks stunning. She sounds gorgeous. Actually, the one and only time I've seen Adele live was at SNL. Henry and I went and sat in the studio and saw her sing Hello. And when we were young, we were crying. I mean, she's so beautiful and pure to watch perform live. And it just feels like such a moment. And her songs are so good that... She really is that star level.
She's something else. Yeah. And even like her, like at the read through reading all these scripts, like some of them cold, I'm assuming, like was so, she's a great reader, great performer, has great timing. And it's like, oh my God, like you kind of are like the full packet. I don't know. I think she's so, I was a fan of hers before, but like now I feel like she, just to even have like the curiosity and like the attitude of like, I've always wanted to kind of host, so why not do it? I'm like, that's great. Like, I don't know. I think that's cool. And I thought she had a great show. A lot of great sketches from our writers that were very suited to her anyway.
And you got to shake your little bonbon.
I got to shake my little bonbon. Yes, that was fun.
Which actually reminds me of a song. And usually how we end episodes is with a song. Do you feel prepared to do that? Do you want to put any imparting words of wisdom onto our very good readers?
I think don't use any hashtags if you want to say something shitty about anybody.
Exactly.
And let us know what you thought of Borat 2. Actually, maybe don't. I've been doing too much reading. I should actually focus on books and not, you know, DMs. Because See, if I put something out there,
wow, the fact that you can either choose to when you think of reading, it's like books and DMs. I actually have been reading too much lately, but it's been DMs. I'm gonna switch back to books 100%.
It's time that I could be using to read a book. And I'm reading this great book right now. Oh, my God. I'm reading this book by Ted Chiang. It's called Exhalationist Short Stories. He's the guy who wrote the short story that Arrival is based on.
Mm.
And so it's just wonderful, like, really super, like, cerebral. Like, just in terms of, like, they make you think these, like, sci-fi stories. He has one that's set in, like, an Arabian Nights tale within a tale, like, setup. And it's about time travel. And it blew my fucking mind. Mm. I'm loving it. You should read Trick Mirror. So anyway, my message to everybody, to the readers, is to literally, hello, read. Let's read more books. I already feel like a better person who does not need to check my phone all the time because, oh, I want to finish this book I'm reading that I'm enjoying. I read more.
You know what I was just thinking to myself?
What?
That we should do a spooky episode for Halloween.
Yes.
But then I realized that would be this episode. So... I guess this was the spooky episode.
No, we can do another spooky episode.
I think it'll be too late.
Oh, but then that'll release on November 4th.
But I think this episode has been a little spooky.
We brought it in
had
some
spooky
dark,
October
spooky
darkness.
Yeah.
What was the song from Hocus Pocus? That could be the one that takes us out.
I put a spell on you.
Hello, you're mine. Oh, you better opt up. I put a spell on you. Whatever it is. You can get superstitious. I don't know the words, but it's the worst. I put
Thora
a spell
Birch.
On you.
And now you're gone. Thora Birch, you couldn't tell if she was playing 7 or like 15. It was that was it. She was so good in that role, but that character was written in a way that was like, when she knows a little too much about sex for a 7-year-old. But anyway.
Thora Birch, she's always been every age. Rule of culture number 9. Bye.
Bye.